I'd like to start this off with a story of young love. I don't know if anybody can relate to something like this ever happening to them in their lifetime, but I can remember back when I was probably in my early 20s, maybe a teenager, and I was at a Valentine's dance, and I was a single guy walking around, and so I saw this woman that was just absolutely beautiful. And it took me a while to just walk around and get my nerve up to talk to her. But I did have a plan of attack. I wanted to just go ahead and do it. I just wanted to go over there and just talk to her as quick as I could. You know, that was gonna be my plan. I just needed to go over there. I needed to talk to her. Something needed to come out of my mouth and something needed to happen afterwards. That was the only thing that was going through my mind. So as I was walking around, there was a guy walking around, microphone. there were vending roses, so I went ahead and I bought a rose, and I walked over there, and I remember just as plain as I could put it, I just said, "I saw you sitting here, and well, this grew out of me, and I wanted to give it to you." And what happened was she unexpectedly turned to me and emotionally lifted in front of me. You know, it was like her whole persona just kind of grew right in front of me. She smiled. She was gushing. She was glowing. You know, she was very responsive. I didn't expect that, you know. And it was such a bright experience for me that I couldn't pay attention to her. You know, I couldn't stay with her at all. And I became completely frozen. I don't know if anybody's ever felt that before. You know, where I was just completely stiff. And so what I did, you know, I kind of fell into my place here. My head fell towards her feet, you know. And as I'm sitting here trying to talk to her, I could start to hear her again, you know, as I was talking to her feet. And miraculously, I kept some sort of a conversation with her. And it kept going on like this. I was talking to her feet, and she was talking to me, and everything was going great until she started talking about her almost immediate breakup with her boyfriend. And as soon as she started talking to her about her boyfriend, my head kind of came up like this. And I was able to have a straightforward conversation with her. Because at that point, I was able to latch onto her pain, and I was able to latch onto her darkness. And the lesson that I took from that was that I saw at that moment neither her nor I were ready to have a discussion about being in each other's company. And she completely broke down in tears and left the dance. I was sitting there, standing there in my own stuff. This morning's reading, I picked it's recovery literature. It's called The Triangle of Self-Obsession. This is really good stuff here. When we are born, we are conscious only of ourselves. We are the universe. We perceive little other than our basic needs. And if these needs are met, we are content. As our consciousness expands, we become aware of a world outside ourselves. We discover that there are people, places, and things around us, and that they fulfill our needs. At this point, we also begin to recognize differences and develop preferences. We learn to want and choose. We are the center of a growing universe and expect to be provided with the things we need and want. Our source of contentment shifts from basic needs miraculously met to the fulfillment of our desires. Most children, through experiences over a period of time, come to realize that the outside world cannot provide all their wants and needs. They begin to supplement what is given to them with their own efforts. As their dependency on people, places, and things decreases, they begin to look at themselves more and more. They become more self-sufficient and learn that happiness and contentment comes from within. Most continue to mature. They recognize and accept their strengths and weaknesses and limitations. At some point, they usually seek the help of a power greater than themselves to provide the things they cannot provide for themselves. For most people, growing up is a natural process. As addicts, however, we seem to falter along the way. We never seem to outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. We never seem to find that self-sufficiency that others do. We continue to depend on the world around us and refuse to accept that we will not be giving everything. We become self-obsessed. Our wants and needs become demands. We reach a point where contentment and fulfillment are impossible. People, places, and things cannot possibly fill the emptiness inside of us, and we react to them with resentment, anger, and fear. Resentment, anger, and fear make up the triangle of self-obsession. All of our defects of character are forms of these three reactions. Self-obsession is at the heart of our insanity. Resentment is the way most of us react to our past. It is reliving of past experiences again and again in our minds. Anger is the way most of us deal with our present. It is a reaction to denial and reality. Fear is what we feel when we think about the future. It is our response to the unknown, a fantasy in reverse. All three of these things are expressions of our self-obsession. They are the ways that we react when people, places, and things, past, present, and future, do not live up to our demands. That's a lot to take away. You know, the first time I read that, you know, one thing that was amazing to me about this type of literature is that it's so simple. You know, it's very simple, it's very hard-hitting, it's very direct, not a lot of $5 words. And, you know, and I notice a lot, you know, I belong to a fellowship where a lot of people will read this, and it's amazing the way people take that, you know, because what I see a lot of times is that, you know, the birth or beginning of whenever people fall out of their self-obsession, like me, for example, a lot of times there's a religious fervor, you know, and the thing of it is, I feel like most people come to this point in their life where they discover there's something else going on other than their own mind and their own self. And so they start to ask themselves some questions like, am I blessed and highly favored? If you don't buy into my logic, are you in fact self-obsessed, angry, or a fearful person? And is this the true reason why we do church or, you know, recovery self-help programs or, you know, outside community projects? You know, is this why we do this, so that we don't fall into that second category of being that self-obsessed person? Oh, okay. Thank you. Can you guys hear me better now? Okay, good deal. So all of us want the first part, you know. And I'm usually very quickly to say that I'm a very imperfect, independent, knowledge-seeking, and a very humble person. I love saying I'm humble. I'm the humblest person you'll ever meet in your life, and I'll prove it to you. Because after all, I'm a helper and I'm a giver, I'm a lover. I'm there for you. I care about you. What can I do to make your life better? But the truth is, I too have my dirty little secrets. I've been living in a world filled with incompetent, ignorant people who can't get me my entire life. I have at times created worlds of great ideas and volumes of rules and boundaries that have formed a belief system that is no more comical than any religious body I have openly mocked in my lifetime. I've done these things. Really have. And this is how I do it. The formula for this belief system is, I latch onto something that emotionally moves me, like, oh, say, God or Earth or whatever, or a political stance. And all I have to do is hide those emotional things about those things that move me into a protected barrier of research, data, factual information, and etc., to where nobody could catch up to me. And finally, only seek out people who don't challenge me emotionally or mentally. And then the final result is, anybody who behaves like me but thinks differently must be a fanatic. The end result for me, though, is that my own certainty was a death sentence for me. I had forgotten about the truth. I had forgotten how to love. I'd forgotten about true compassion. But man, did I have a good time. This all came to a head on December 24th of 2006. I did something that I don't think I had ever meaningfully done since I was a child and asked for help. And in doing so, I had to get bare naked honest about myself, open-minded to a world that existed outside of my thinking, and willing to take direction from those who had come before me. I had to admit that I didn't know everything internally and not just externally. In other words, the secrets had to go. No longer could I be the architect of my own thinking. My community started opening up. My mind again became a fresh slate in which to graft new ideas from. And at this point, usually people in my spot back then drift off into all kinds of spiritual and religious fervors and highs because the emotional override from being saved is so powerful that in most cases, it can lock a person right back down into a cloud of religious zeal that still doesn't allow me to respect my limitations. So if my way of doing things made me sick, and your way of doing things exclusively kept me sick, what was left? And what I've come to find out is that that answer is we. And that's a lot of what this sermon's all about. I found the word to be the most profound yet simplest word I know. The genius of we is something I have been able to nurture here at First Unitarian Universalist Church. I have found that in order for we to work, I have to be an active participant in it. In other words, I matter. My efforts matter, and the voice that I carry matters. I've also found that in order for we to work, your voices, your efforts, and your experiences matter. And I follow this premise best when these things enter my heart, unchanged or altered by my mind's filter. I have found that my higher power, we talk about having more than one way up the mountain, one way up the mountain as a UU. And for me, this applies even to me plus God equals we. Me plus my spirit of light equals we. Me plus the world equals we. I asked earlier if I am blessed or highly favored, and with this new understanding, I can confidently say, whatever the case may be, it matters to me, and that's the relevance I can give back to the spiritual powers that are in my life and the people who share their powers with me. In other words, my own understanding and my own acknowledgement of a power working in my life is my contribution. Finally, what this concept has done to fit in my life the most is that at some point I came across a mirror facing down, and as I picked my head up, I saw my own light looking back at me and realized that the biggest problem that I had with this light is that it had never left me, even when everything else in my life was dark. For my benediction and ending, my hope for all of us is that although our candle may seem insignificant, we may keep it lit so our true power can matter to those who seek us out.